Test.
Check this out.
Ranger.
Autonomous Action Radio, a multimedia radio show, a website, an idea, a suggestion, an action plan. Because it's up to us now.
This communique will most likely be marked and destroyed shortly after it is discovered. Listen on at your own risk.
Hello and welcome to this episode of Autonomous Action Radio. I'm your amicable anarchist host Linda, and on today's show we'll be taking a look at D and E in the anarchist alphabet. Also finding out more about a little place called Bougainville, where the locals took on a giant mining company which was backed by several governments and won, in what is said to be the world's first eco-revolution.
I want to tell you about
Conclusion?
Guess what? I want to tell you about anarchism.
Conclusion?
Because I
Guess
think what? That it is well that you should know all
Whatever
about
people
it.
Want is true.
I'm telling you about anarchism.
Conclusion?
Because everything
what?
That you have heard about it is wrong. Oh, got it?
Guess what? Say, how can they make a statement? It's true even if it is
wrong.
Because they may come back to you and say,
wrong.
Who can say it is? Who can say it is?
So to continue on with the anarchist activist alphabet, today we're going to look at D. D is for democracy. A true direct democracy in which all people have an equal voice and an equal impact in the decisions made by their community. Not a polyarchy, not an oligarchy, not a representative democracy. Direct democracy is based on the realistic notion that people know best how to look after their own affairs. The notion of direct democracy is compatible with the idea of a delegate. Someone who carries out the decisions you have made, and is incompatible with the ideas of a representative, who makes decisions on behalf of others, or otherwise has an unequal say. Thus, a direct democracy may involve councils of delegates whose role it is to represent the wishes of their group or community. D is for David Rovix. David Rovix is a singer from Portland, Oregon in the USA. He sings many songs that relate to things anarchists care about, such as Afghanistan, anti-war, bicycles, Colombia, Cuba, depleted uranium, ecology, environment, endangered species, gender relations, George W. Bush, global warming, guerrilla gardening, indigenous people, Indonesia, Iraq, Korea, labor history, landmines, cluster bombs, Latin America, love songs, media, Mexico, nuclear bombs, Palestine, pirates, police brutality, and politics. You get the idea, just about everything. Rovix has made all his recorded music freely available as downloadable MP3 files. He encourages the free distribution of his work by all non-profit means to promote his work and spread political messages. He speaks out against websites or programs like iTunes that charge money for downloading his songs.
It can happen in a moment. Sometimes it does when what could be is and what shouldn't be was. There are times when you gotta stand steady. There are other times when you gotta be ready. The window can open, it seems so wide, but you can never tell when it's gonna slam shut. One day you're a target on the firing ranges, the next day all of a sudden everything changes. The scene is revealed, and you're on top of the hill. hearts are coming, others have came, and then there are those when you just gotta take aim. Understand. Coast to coast, they're lying at a CEO's command. From nationalist public radio, CNN and NBC. Big Brother spewing propaganda from the disinformation ministry. They say the economy is booming. We hear the homeless beggars' cries. They say we help poor countries. We see bombs falling from the skies. Reality doesn't exist, they're trying to say. But some of us decided there is another way. Seize the airwaves, seize the time. 'Cause lying to the people is the real crime. When it's all owned by corporations and theirs is the only word, we will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. We will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. Someone got a transmitter, started up a station. Then the idea spread right across the nation. Like the land and water, the air must be free. So let us shout together, fuck the FCC. Seize the airwaves, seize the time. 'Cause lying to the people is the real crime. When it's all owned by corporations and theirs is the only word, we will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. We will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. And we'll do it all together in a grassroots style, tearing down the fences throughout this whole square mile. It's the new town meeting, it's the way the news should be. The rulers call it chaos, we say it's democracy. So when you turn on the radio and you've had it with this shit, from 88 to 107 makes you wanna have a fit. When you listen to the music and it's all the same pop song, start up a pirate station, 'cause that's where you belong. Seize the airwaves, seize the time. 'Cause lying to the people is the real crime. When it's all owned by corporations and theirs is the only word, we will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. Seize the airwaves, seize the time. 'Cause lying to the people is the real crime. When it's all owned by corporations and theirs is the only word, we will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. We will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard.
Dead Prez. Dead Prez are a revolutionary gangster-style hip-hop duo from New York. Formed in 1996, Dead Prez focus on social justice and corporate control of the media. They have released 3 studio albums and mixtapes, including in 2010, Turn Off the Radio Volume 4, Revolutionary But Gangster Grills, which features Malcolm Garvey Huey, a tribute to Malcolm X, Marcus Garvey, and Huey P. Newton. But who are Malcolm Garvey and Huey? Malcolm X is an African-American Muslim minister and human rights activist that has been called one of the most influential African-Americans in history. From 1952, he was a member of the Nation of Islam, a religious movement whose stated goals are to improve the spiritual, mental, social, and economic condition of African-Americans in the United States and all of humanity. Originally Malcolm Little, Malcolm changed his name to X, a custom amongst Nation of Islam followers, who considered their surnames to have been imposed by white slaveholders after their African names were taken from them. As a spokesman for the Nation of Islam, he taught black supremacy and advocated separation of black and white Americans, in contrast to the civil rights movement's emphasis on integration. after breaking with the Nation of Islam in 1964, saying of his association with it, "I did many things as a black Muslim that I'm sorry for now. I was a zombie then," pointed in a certain direction and told to march. And becoming a Sunni Muslim, he disavowed racism and expressed willingness to work with civil rights leaders, though still emphasizing black self-determination and self-defense. Marcus Garvey. Marcus Garvey was a Jamaican political leader, publisher, journalist, entrepreneur, and orator who was a staunch proponent of black nationalism. He was active during the early 1900s and was the founder of the Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Communities League, a black nationalist organization, and a number of others based on Pan-Africanism, an ideology which encourages solidarity with Africans worldwide. Huey Newton was an African-American political and urban activist who, along with Bobby Seale, co-founded the Black Panther Party in 1966. Although born in Louisiana, Newton grew up in Oakland, California, where he says he was made to feel ashamed of being black. When he was in his 20s, Huey attended Oakland's Merritt College, where he became involved in politics and met Bobby Seale, who he co-founded the Black Panther Party for Self-Defense with in 1966. The party achieved national and international impact and renown for their deep involvement in the Black Power movement and in politics in the 1960s and 70s.
Malcolm Garvey Huey studied Malcolm Garvey Huey. Life was like a movie. Studied Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey.
Free Mumia.
I die. I organize. Everything I do's revolutionize. I build what's good for the whole damn hood. Study G's like these. Really think you should. I studied Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey. Marcia Cody with the Uzi. Listening to Fela Kuti. I'm a goon with the machete. Especially if it's deadly. Got the Santos for the Hexy to protect me. So respect me. This is heavy, legendary, revolutionary. My wifey, she resurrect me when they thought they had me buried. Took me out the cemetery. Now it's family over every. Cause it's all that's necessary to avoid the commissary. I'ma live for you five. So I stop getting high. If you know, then you recognize. It's that black and brown pride. This the power of the mind. RBG, God divine. You can see through the lies if you could read between the lines. I live, I die. I organize everything I do, revolutionize. I build what's good for the whole damn hood. Study G's like these, really think you should. Study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey.
Malcolm Garvey Huey, Bunchy, Bobby, Pac, and Tookie. Sitting by the door so you can say I'm acting spooky. Just like in the movie, son, you better pack your toolie. Niggas wish be acting fruity, you'll be cracking like they pookie. Rather smoke a doobie than be burning and eluding. Bang, bang, pig shooting, we should blame Rudy Julie. Yanny for the camera, shine a white and nose candy. Let you banging on the system, you a gangster wearing panties. RBG, my family, from the Bronx to Miami. Police cannot stand me, Pacquiao like a Manny. Call me little Bobby Hutton, cause I'm first to push the button. Rappers don't be saying nothing to the system, we say fuck 'em. This is for Nahanda, Mama C, Mama Akua. All the real OGs, I'm a soldier, cause you told me study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey, I'm reporting in the duty.
Sticky icky, yours truly here for duty. Don DeVino, M.A. Uno, you know how we drop the jury. This is real, not a movie, not Mickey Donald Goofy. I'm a soldier, I avoid a bitch nigga like the cooties.
School face in a hoodie.
Fresh pair of khakis, we could do this like we fam. I go to war like the Apaches. For whatever, I stay ready. I learned that in Tallahassee. Baba Toon, they used to school me as a juvie. Skipping classes, never let the system use me. My duty is my passage. Watch the homies in your army, they don't always show their badges. Keep your family living healthy. Teach your children about their blackness. Teach your wifey how to use the ratchet. This shit is classic. Get your food, clothes, and shelter. Fuck your system, pimp it backwards. I ain't hating, I'm just saying. If you wanna be a rapper, study
Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey. Study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey. Study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey. Study Malcolm Garvey Huey. Malcolm Garvey Huey.
A tactical approach is designed to get certain results. It's designed to keep you alive. It's designed to bring about victory.
Huh?
Don't let anybody take your manhood. Be proud of our heritage. Somebody said earlier tonight, we don't have anything to be ashamed of. Somebody told a lie one day. They couched it in language. They made everything black, ugly, and evil. Look in your dictionary and see the synonyms of the word black. It's always something degrading and low and sinister. Look at the word white. It's always something pure, high, and clean. But I want to get the language right tonight. I want to get the language so right that everybody here will cry out, yes, I'm black, I'm proud of it, I'm black and beautiful.
E is for Emma Goldman. Emma Goldman, feminist heroine, anarchist activist, editor, writer, teacher, jailbird, and general troublemaker, was born on June 27, 1869 in Kovno, which was then part of the Russian Empire. In 1884, she travelled to America, living in Rochester, New York, where she worked in a sweatshop sewing overcoats for more than 10 hours a day, earning $2.50 a week. Goldman was drawn to anarchism after the Haymarket Square affair, which occurred in 1886 in Chicago. On July 4, during a labor demonstration, someone threw a bomb at police who were dispersing the crowd. 7 officers were killed. Controversially, 8 anarchists were convicted of conspiracy in relation to the bombing. 7 sentenced to death. The Haymarket affair is considered significant as the origin of the May 1st International Labor Day. When she moved to New York City, Emma met radicals Alexander Berkman and Johan Most. She soon became a public speaker on women's equality, free love, workers' rights, free universal education regardless of gender or race, and anarchism. Emma made a number of important contributions to anarchist thought. In particular, she is remembered for incorporating sexual politics into anarchism, an idea that had only been hinted at by earlier anarchists. Goldman campaigned and went to prison for the right of women to practice birth control. She argued that a political solution was not enough to get rid of the unequal and repressive relations between the sexes. There had to be a massive transformation of values, most importantly in women themselves. Only anarchist revolution and not the ballot, in Emma's view, would set women free. During her life, she was arrested and imprisoned for her beliefs. Her longest sentence being for involvement in setting up no conscription leagues and organizing rallies against the First World War. Goldman, in her political youth, held targeted violence to be a legitimate means of revolutionary struggle. Goldman at the time believed that the use of violence, while distasteful, could be justified in relation to the social benefits it might accrue. She advocated propaganda of the deed, or violence carried out to encourage the masses to revolt. She supported her partner Alexander Berkman's attempt to kill industrialist Henry Clay Frick. After being deported to Russia, her experiences prompted her to reverse this belief. Emma and Alexander Berkman were deported when Attorney General Alexander Mitchell Palmer and J. Edgar Hoover, head of the U.S. Department of Justice's General Intelligence Division, were intent on using the Anarchist Exclusion Act of 1918 to deport any non-citizens they could identify as advocates of anarchy or revolution. Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman, Hoover wrote, while they were in prison, are beyond doubt two of the most dangerous anarchists in this country, and return to the community will result in undue harm. One of the most famous quotes attributed to her is, "If I can't dance, it's not my revolution," or, "If I can't dance, I don't want to be in your revolution." She didn't actually say these words, although she did express this sentiment. In her 1931 autobiography, Living My Life, she says, "At the dances, I was one of the most untiring and gayest. One evening, a cousin of Alexander Berkman, a young boy, took me aside. With a grave face, as if he were about to announce the death of a dear comrade, he whispered to me that it did not behove an agitator to dance. Certainly not with such reckless abandon, anyway. It was undignified for one who was on the way to become a force in the anarchist movement. My frivolity would only hurt the cause. I grew furious at the impudent influence of the boy. I told him to mind his own business. I was tired of having the cause constantly thrown in my face. I did not believe that a cause which stood for a beautiful ideal, for anarchism, for release and freedom from conventions and prejudice, should demand the denial of life and joy. I insisted that our cause would not expect me to become a nun, and that the movement should not be turned into a cloister. If it meant that, I did not want it. I want freedom, the right to self-expression, everybody's right to beautiful, radiant things. Anarchism meant that to me, and I would live it in spite of the whole world, prisons, persecution, anything. Yes, even in spite of the condemnation of my own comrades, I would live my beautiful ideal. At 67, Emma travelled to Spain during the Spanish Civil War and was involved in the CNTFAI, an anarcho-syndicalist union. She lived her final years in Canada.
Can't work, but all anarchists must do is put in work, not for the money, out of necessity. Imagine a world where you could follow your passions, a federation built on community. Shouts to Occupy Sandy, stepping in with the mutual aid. He'd find out you an anarchist if you took the time to read. While academic debate tactics were shutting down the Keystone XL pipeline, Clinton Gardens in the projects. They push us to the sidewalk, we take the streets, we strike debt. We can bring things back to normal or do the opposite. We can bicker over differences, or we can fuck up shit, cause shit's fucked up and bullshit. In the 1800s, anarchists were libertines. Only in America are libertarians an arm of the right wing. They put a gun in your face and tell you to be nonviolent, but ignorance is violence. Who spreads ignorance through public schools and sends the poor to die overseas to steal more shit for you know who? You know who? If voting changed anything, they'd make it illegal. She said that 100 years ago. Ain't shit changed, but the manufacturers are weapons. Ain't shit changed, they've replaced churches with banks and mainstream news. This government was designed to overrule the mob, so we mobs designed to overrule the government. Emma Goldman, I think I'm Emma Goldman. In the belly of the beast, make that motherfucker sick. Emma Goldman, I must be Emma Goldman. Must be doing something wrong if the feds ain't on my dick. You can say I'm guilty of propping up a cult of personality. I'm a Malcolm X man, by any means necessary. Avant-garde say I'm dumbing it down, but Emma didn't speak in riddles, she spoke in a common tongue. No future utopias, we're building it now, horizontally. No 10,000 MLKs getting black and black all day. I'm a Kropotkin man myself. The streets is my office where I plan my attack. You rap, we plot, you vote, we act. I'll never say bitch in a song again. Liberal, I'm Emma Goldman.
Anarchism, a social philosophy which aims at the emancipation, economic, social, political, and spiritual of the human race.
Autonomous Action Radio for Triple Z's Anarchy Show.
I want you.
Bougainville Island is the main island of the autonomous region of Bougainville, part of Papua New Guinea. Situated northeast of Australia and under 2,000 kilometres away, the first European contact with the island was in 1768 when a French explorer, Louis de Bougainville, claimed the island and named it after himself. Since then, it has been under the control of the Germans, Australians, and Japanese, but eventually became part of Papua New Guinea. Although the struggle for independence continues after civil war and a declaration of independence in 1975 and 1990. Autonomous Action Radio spoke to Daniel Jones, who recently visited Bougainville, to find out about his trip to the island where an amazing David and Goliath war was fought. We're also going to be hearing some excerpts from the 2001 film about the struggle, The Coconut Revolution.
This is the Pacific Ocean, a few hundred miles northeast of Australia. Members of the Bougainville Revolutionary Army cram their boats with much-needed supplies of medicine and fuel and prepare to set off from the Solomon Islands for home. But first of all, there is a prayer for safe passage. Their prayers I know will be needed, because home for these BRA guerrillas is the little-known island of Bougainville, where they're fighting an even lesser-known war of independence with Papua New Guinea. For 7 years, Papua New Guinea has blockaded the island. Its gunboats and helicopters patrol these waters with shoot-to-kill orders, which means we have a three-hour gauntlet to run. I'm here because this is a war for which Britain is also responsible. It was the huge mine that a British company dug on Bougainville which provoked the fighting, and it was Britain's casual redrawing of the border a century ago that turned it into war. Breaking down on that border as we enter Papua New Guinea sea space seems about the worst place to do so. I scan the horizon for gunboats, knowing we're carrying so much fuel that just a stray bullet will be enough to fry us. The horizon, however, stays serene. This is a route that's cost many lives, yet it's Bougainville's only channel to the outside world. It is also the only way in to the longest and bloodiest conflict in the Pacific since World War II. Just as we near the island, the horizon loses its serenity. We breathe with relief when it turns out to be another BRA boat. But at least I've had a tiny taste of what the Bougainvillians go through every day. This is the story of an unsung people who took on Papua New Guinea, Australia, and the biggest mining company in the world, who started by fighting helicopter gunships with bows and arrows, and have lost a tenth of their population, and yet who managed to create what may be the world's first true eco-revolution.
On the line down from Wollongong, we've got Daniel Jones. How are you going, Daniel?
Yeah, good, thanks, Linda. Yeah.
Now, tell us where you're at.
Yeah, okay, I'm at Centre Point Aboriginal Tent Embassy, and I just came back from a couple of month trip in Bougainville, where I delivered a crowdfunded project for solar powered filmmaking from a Bougainvillean filmmaker, as well as some other research related to customary land and how that affects the Aboriginal sovereignty movement in Australia.
Can you tell us? Can you use a bit of a background about Bougainville?
Yeah, sure. Well, basically in the late 80s, 1988 to 89, Bougainvillean people led a revolution against Rio Tinto because they destroyed part of their island in a gold and copper mining project, and that led to a long and brutal civil war all through the 90s, funded by Australian military, supplied PNG military with helicopter gunships, and all sorts of horrific human rights abuses took place. And now the mine has been shut for over 20 years, and but BCL and Rio Tinto are still trying very hard to get back in there against the wishes of, you know, the majority of Bougainvillean people.
So BCL, what does that stand for?
Bougainville Copper Limited, and they're a subsidiary company to Rio Tinto and CRA, Rio Tinto Australia.
Okay, so it's basically one company.
Yeah, one company, a lot of European shareholders, a lot of investment from PNG government, ownership from PNG government, and Australian CRA, they're the three major owners of that company, and they never paid any compensation. They were kicked out by the Bougainvillean people themselves and the BRA, Bougainville Revolutionary Army.
So this is said to be the first ecological revolution.
Yeah, it's reported that way in the film The Coconut Revolution, and it's very true. You know, people are very ecologically minded, they live very sustainable village lifestyles, and they really see mining as a, you know, the buggers up their water. That, you know, they're not into mining at all. Their foundation of economy is on cocoa, like cash crops like cocoa and dried coconut and other cash crops, and they're really not interested in any more mining with that sort of foreign investment. Like they're sort of interested in self-determined manpower mining, and that's taking place at the old mine site. They're very ecologically minded people and very self-determined and self-governing and innovative, amazing people.
So what sort of mining is taking place?
Basically washing gold, like sort of gold panning, but you know, there's hundreds of people down at the old mine site in the contaminated Java River panning for gold, and a lot of those people make quite a good living out of that. And there's some other smaller kind of manpowered mining projects involving shovels, and unfortunately some are using mercury. That's something that they've been taught from European miners that have come in and showed them. But all in all, they're sort of focused on the idea of owning their resources and having access to do those sort of small-scale manpowered mining projects.
So so they're taking Rio Tinto's gold?
Well, Rio Tinto, as far as they're concerned, certainly not Rio Tinto's gold. And that's, you know, that the mining policy has been redrafted controversially by an AusAid-funded guy from Australian National University called Anthony Reagan, and a lot of the ex-combatants from BRA are very concerned about his involvement in redrafting the autonomous Bougainville government mining policy. And they certainly don't see it as Rio Tinto's goal at all.
So that's the Bougainville Revolutionary Army, and Bougainville was part of Papua New Guinea, but after this?
Well, that's right. That was due to the original mining deal and Australia's input that allowed PNG to take some kind of state ownership over Bougainville. But, you know, there's been a long-standing independence movement in Bougainville from 1975 when PNG got independence. And ethnically, they're really quite different from Papua New Guineans. They're geographically located quite some way apart. Like, they're actually very closely related to the Solomon Islands. And so they're still actually part of Papua New Guinea state through the autonomous Bougainville government, who is kind of like planted there by the PNG government. But there's a referendum on independence coming up in 2015 where the population will kind of be voting on it, on its independence and how they're going to sustain themselves economically and be recognised by the international community as an independent nation.
Great. Thanks very much for talking to us today, Daniel. We're talking to Daniel Jones, who has just been over to Bougainville. We'll just go to a song and then we'll come back and we'll talk to you more.
chuli kuda kade. I want a much of the violence, brother. Jano, Motwa, I and I do. Don't deal with violence. I and I is peace or against what a Babylon shall escape this judgment. I and I know that all of you shall witness the day that Babylon shall fall.
On the line from Wollongong, we've got Daniel Jones, who's filling us in on his trip to Bougainville. And Daniel, you met with some of the former freedom fighters.
Yeah, that's right. And there, majority of young people between the age of 30 and into their 50s were ex-combatants, BRA commanders and soldiers alike, and they've been coerced into giving up their arms with the UN type peacekeeping forces, etc. They're very peaceful people. They don't want any more fighting and so on. The BRA was simply there defending themselves and their island from attack funded by Australia and the PNG government related to shutting down the mine. And now that the issues are settled, there's no real tension with these BRA commanders. I met a lot of them and heard a lot of stories about the things they were involved with, and some very sad stories as well. Essentially they're keeping the peace as much as anybody else from Bougainville.
So what's going to be their plan if Rio Tinto comes back in to claim the gold?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question, and what I got from on the ground is that they really don't want any more bloodshed, but they certainly don't want BCL or Rio Tinto back in. Some are open to other companies, but primarily they're focused on forming their own resource ownership and their own sort of company if any mining is going to take place. But that said as well, a majority of ordinary people are just not interested in mining. They're interested in ecotourism. They're interested in furthering their cash crops and agricultural potential. There's an enormous potential for a chocolate factory there because of the cocoa that's being exported, but that could be value added. And I'm not sure what would happen if Rio Tinto forced its way back in. I don't think it's very likely, but In that case, I'm interested in supporting people from here and putting pressure on BCL, who has an office in Sydney, Bougainville Copper Limited. The guy's name's Peter Taylor. He was one of the original kind of miners there. And, I'm actually thinking of organising a protest in the near future there, or more of a just confronting him and asking him some of the hard questions.
You're saying, yeah, Daniel, that they hold no illusions about, that this, the big global machine, is going to want to come back and get this gold at some time or something like that.
Yeah, well, they're not really frightened of that. They beat these people once, and they're certainly, they're not going to let their island be destroyed anymore, or, foreign interests come in and force their way back in. And I don't think this company is prepared to push it that way. They're more sort of sleazily trying to get back in with, covert means and so on. I'm not too sure, but they certainly don't want any more bloodshed, but they certainly don't, they're expecting compensation from Rio Tinto. There's actually a continuing court case in the US where a lot of information came out about Rio Tinto being responsible for the orders of the PNG Defence Force going in and, committing human rights abuses, etc., and that's still going on in the US, that court case.
And we've been talking, you've been talking about cash crops or chocolate factory making sort of money or kind of in the global sense of the global economy. But wouldn't the people maybe just happy to live their traditional lives and not be involved in any kind of commerce?
Yeah, sort of, to a point. I mean, they see that the Western influence has already sort of been in there, so that a lot of people are looking for some kind of economic engagement, and like economic gateways with the outside world. And unfortunately, that's still being run by PNG, and they're getting paid very low prices for their cocoa, which, we buy a fair trade labelled cocoa in Australia, and from what I saw on the ground, they're certainly not getting paid the value that they could be getting for their cocoa. But a lot of people do like sort of just sustain their lives in the village, and they're not all that interested in that sort of economic stuff as well. But a lot of people are, and I'm sort of trying to help them with forming some kind of union to set their own price for their cocoa, because they're kind of being ripped off by PNG middleman type buyers that are buying their cocoa very cheaply and then exporting it to Europe for three times the price or whatever. I think there's just a lot of potential there, and people themselves see the potential in ecotourism and agriculture as opposed to mining.
But you were saying before that the standard of living is quite good.
Yeah, well, I think so. Like, it's my personal opinion, and like a lot of them think they're quite impoverished because they see, Western kind of developments. But, from my point of view, they've got a lot of clean water. Their sanitation is quite good. They grow and eat all their own food. Like, they're certainly not starving, and their land is very fertile. And they know this as well. They feel very happy and blessed to have the island that they have, and that's why they so strongly protect it.
Great. Well, thanks very much for talking to us today, Daniel. We've been talking to Daniel Jones from his trip to Bougainville. Is there anywhere people can look out for more information, Daniel?
Yeah, sure. I'm sort of involved in running a blog with my filmmaking friend Clive Porbo, and that website address is www.mekamui.wordpress.com. Mekamui is spelled MEKAMUI. So there's lots of stories from my trip on there, and sort of media counteracting the mining, pro-mining propaganda, etc. So yeah, thanks very much for the interview, Linda.
Maybe would it be supportive too if someone's on a mine for their little overseas eco tour trip? Would that be a good destination?
Oh, absolutely. I totally recommend Bougainville as a tourist destination. Like, the people are so nice there. So, like, I was a bit scared at first because of the hype around, foreigners not being wanted and so on, but they're actually really amazing, beautiful people, and there's a lot of eco-tourist resorts and business ventures popping up, which I'm going to be helping to promote in the next 12 months before. I'll be definitely going back as well myself in the next year or two.
When I'm not gasping for air, I get an idea of why the Bougainvillians have such fierce reverence for the place they call Mekamui, or Sacred Island, and why they could no longer sit by and watch its minerals being plundered.
We have seen our valleys, we have seen our forest, we have seen our rivers, beautiful trees, beautiful forest, literally, you know, thrown into dust, and we will not allow that to happen.
En route to Francis, we come across his vice president, Joseph Kabui, who puts the history of the place into perspective for us. Ever since the French explorer, Louis de Bougainville, put his name on the map in 1768, the island has gone through an endless game of colonial pass the parcel. Geographically, ethnically, and culturally, it was always part of the Solomon Islands. But 100 years ago, the imperial powers decided to change all that.
The situation that we are in is not only a unique for Bougainville. I mean, there are many African countries that the superpowers, you know, merely just carve them out, you know, put a line right through and say, okay, this part belongs to you, this part belongs to me. A deal was struck between Germany and Britain. Germany saying, okay, I'll give Western Samoa to you, Britain, and Britain said, okay, I'll give Bougainville to you.
Germany didn't keep Bougainville long, though, as Australia grabbed it during the First World War. During the Second, Japan snatched the island for a few years before Australia grabbed it back. And in the meantime, it had ended up as part of Papua New Guinea, which got independence in 1975. Bougainville declared independence 2 weeks earlier, not that anyone listened, and it took another 13 years for war to break out. At last we find the man who can really explain why things suddenly changed. Francis Ona is portrayed by many as a humorless, hardline revolutionary. I suspect they never really met him, because it certainly isn't the impression I get. So this is Papua New Guinea's public enemy number one. When he's not running either the war or the self-declared Republic of Bougainville, Francis goes gardening.
My fighting on Bougainville based on these factors. One, that is, we are fighting for man and his culture. And two, land and environment. And the third one is independence.
You've been listening to Autonomous Action Radio on Z Digital. For more information about the show, you can go to autonomousactionradio.com or 4ZZZFM.org.au.
Lost all your hope. When there's no one to help, you find where to go. Don't have to look far, you know where I am. I'm waiting at the end of the road. Waiting at the end of the road. We're traveling, don't feel alone. No matter how far you are from your home, when you look up ahead, you'll know where I am. I'm waiting at the end of the road. Waiting at the end of the road. And the places I go and the songs that I sing, the rules that I break and the people I meet. I've got a name, one you can repeat. But I'm waiting at the end of the road. Waiting at the end of the road. We'll try just about anything to make you turn back and be their machine. They'll shackle your feet and they'll shackle your dreams. They say you're as free as can be. Say you're as free as can be. The losses don't take one more step. on the road to a place where ideas are not set. But I say run and leave it all behind. Run till there's no running left. Run till there's no running left. And whatever you think and whatever you want, whatever you need and whatever you've got, you've got a right to be who you are. And don't let them take it away. Yeah, don't let them take you away. Spirit, but I'm still alive.